We're reading a familiar story today from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 2. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we have observed his star at its rising, and we have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. In calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, Herod inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. This is the word of the Lord. Well, greetings again as we enter the second week of the year of our Lord, 2023. By now, you may have succeeded in keeping some of your resolutions, or you may have already given them up. I read these sobering statistics. 43% of all people expect to fail with new resolutions before February. And almost 1 out of 4 will quit their efforts within the first week of making them. Most people quit before the end of January, and only 9% successfully keep their New Year's resolutions. But beyond focusing on any of our resolutions or not, I do want to ask you how you feel about the year that lies ahead. How do you feel as Christians, as residents of Southern Maryland and the United States of America, or as citizens of the world? Are you optimistic or not? Hopeful or not? Eager or not? Emboldened or not? In Isaiah chapter 60, the Israelites had just returned to Jerusalem after their exile in Babylonia. The community that began to reestablish itself on the ruins of the city soon became discouraged. The restoration of their homeland was not as easy or simple as they had expected. Perhaps they didn't want to do the hard work of rebuilding, placing heavy stone upon heavy stone. Perhaps new relationships with new responsibilities felt too daunting. Perhaps letting go of their anger and bitterness about the exile was too challenging. Or perhaps they were just too overwhelmed with grief over all that they had lost, people and property. So like their ancestors in the Exodus from Egypt, they were grumbling despite finally being set free from captivity. But we can appreciate their discouragement. Starting over from scratch is not easy. Loss and grief can immobilize us. The Israelites were a discouraged community then, and we can think of so many discouraged communities today. In fact, we can think of entire peoples that are discouraged in our day. The millions of refugees, many separated from family, stuck in detention camps by various borders around the world. The people of Ukraine or Pakistan who have lost their homes, businesses, schools, hospital, and farmlands, whether to war or flooding. People living in food deserts where healthy food is hard to find or afford. We can appreciate their discouragement. And many, many churches have declining memberships. I won't go on with this sobering list except to say that with the surge of this new COVID variant, or the recent chaos on Capitol Hill is not the kind of good news we would wish for as we begin the new year. Aside from the big picture, maybe some of you are feeling a bit dejected about a particular personal setback, like a medical problem or a disagreement with a family member or good friend. Or maybe there is a societal situation like climate change or the rise in hate crimes that vex you. If so, we can admit to seeing the similarity we often share with those despondent ancient Israelites. Even in beautiful southern Maryland, in one of the richest countries in the world, with food on our tables and clothes on our backs, we too can find ourselves grumbling. And depression is like a virus, you know. It's catching. So if we're surrounded by bad news or sad people, it's hard to be buoyant or hopeful. Well, onto this somber scene way back there in Jerusalem, and for us now here in Bowie, the prophet Isaiah comes with words of encouragement, a breath of fresh air. Even more than encouragement, he has words of hope for us, for he brings an announcement of salvation, and we remember that salvation is not just in the afterlife. This salvation is for us here and now. As we read in our call to worship, he brings a message reminding the Israelites and us that the Lord is the light in the darkness. Indeed, the light God shines in the darkness is so bright that it will attract and then save other discouraged peoples. Isaiah understood that the Israelites had once again failed to put their trust in the Lord, and that lack of faith allowed in feelings of doom and gloom. He was a messenger from God bringing good news. Well, history does repeat itself. And once again, around the time of the birth of Jesus, the Jews found themselves in another time of deep darkness. This time when Herod, the cruel and evil Roman, rules over Jerusalem and all of Judea. Matthew makes a point of saying, in the time of Herod, to make sure we understand that in that day, the principalities and powers were doing their very best to suppress any hope in the people, any confidence in their future. Yet even in the time of Herod, in the midst of oppression from an unyielding empire, the entrance of Jesus into the world activated reverberations felt by people thousands of miles away. People who were simply studying the choreography of the stars in the sky, the wise men. And they were following the light of that star ever hopeful what it would mean for a world promised a great leader. For in the culture of that day and age, both religious and secular, it was believed that the birth of a great ruler would be accompanied by celestial signs. In Isaiah chapter 60, verse 6, the prophet foretold, "They shall bring gold and frankincense, and they shall proclaim praise for the Lord." So who were these magi? Well, they were Gentiles or non-Jews. And whereas Herod tries to kill Jesus by slaughtering all the innocent baby boys in Jerusalem, these foreigners honor Jesus with their gifts and with their worship. The historical obscurity of the Magi encourages speculation. Matthew doesn't say that there were three of them. That's just our legend. A 5th century BC Greek historian said that they were a caste of priests from Persia. Others trace them to the Kurds of 2 millennia ago. Current-day Kurds live in Kurdistan, which today is split between Iran, Iraq, Turkey, and Syria, places far north and northeast of Bethlehem. So nobody knows their origin. But what matters for Matthew in his story is that they were Gentiles from nations, as Isaiah had described. They are drawn to Christ's light. The nations acknowledge that he has been born King of the Jews, and he is their king as well. T.S. Eliot begins his poem, The Journey of the Magi, this way. "A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey. The ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter." So finally arriving after that uncomfortable and almost unending journey, the Magi enter the house, as Matthew puts it, and worship the baby. They signify that no particular religious, economic, or geographic background, no distance, can keep God's salvation from those who seek it. God will do God's work of salvation no matter where we are in life. And that saving goes beyond individuals to entire peoples. God invites everyone, everywhere, to participate in God's saving activity. Matthew's gospel tells us how a young, poor, and pregnant girl like Mary, a stepfather like Joseph, night shift workers like the shepherds, foreign scholars like the Magi, fishermen, outcasts, Roman soldiers, and so many others we read about in the New Testament are led to the light, and no darkness can overcome it. Well, Herod and Caesar are long gone. We are living in the time of Assad, Putin, Kim Jong-un, Xi, Zelensky, King Charles, Marcos, and Biden, among many others, for better or for worse. If we are to be people of the light, it's good for us to remember the words of Psalm 146. "Do not put your trust in princes, in human beings who cannot save. When their spirit departs, they return to the ground on the very day their plans came to nothing. Blessed are those whose help is in the name of God, whose hope is in the Lord their God. He is the maker of heaven and earth, the sea and everything in them. He remains faithful forever. He upholds the cause of the oppressed and gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets prisoners free. The Lord gives sight to the blind. The Lord lifts up those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous. The Lord watches over the foreigner and sustains the fatherless and the widow, but he frustrates the way of the wicked. These are the ancient but ever-relevant promises that we are to focus on. They are to be our star, our North Star, when we're tempted to be dejected or afraid, or when we're tempted to put ultimate trust in any temporal leader. Those words do not mean that we ought to sit back in comfort waiting for Jesus to take care of all the hurts and the hurting ones. Nor does it mean we should all be Pollyannas who are blind to the harsh realities either close by or far away. No, it goes deeper than that. We're called to recognize all those injustices and wrongs that need correcting, knowing in our bones that the power for us to do so comes from the Holy Spirit. The Lord's light will give us what we need in order to be a light for others. But our work is not to recreate what has been lost. As Isaiah tells us, the Israelites thought that they were to do way back then when they returned to Jerusalem. We aren't to be about returning to our reliance on fossil fuels or gas-guzzling cars. We aren't to be about slipping back into political systems that are more like dictatorships than democracies. We're not to go about returning to mindsets that want to keep down women or minorities. We aren't to be about idealizing the church of the 1950s or any other bygone era, rather than believing that God is always calling us to do a new thing, perhaps a different way to be together in mission. Jesus' ministry was not about making his Jewish brothers and sisters adhere more tightly to their arcane laws. Jesus' ministry was not about keeping the oppressed people in their long-held low positions. Jesus' ministry was not about defending Herod or Caesar. Jesus' ministry was not about health care or food for only those who could afford it. He was about making all things new. If we can't see how radical he was, our vision is severely impaired. And if we can't be open to new ways he asks us to follow, our faith is severely impaired. In either event, we turn our eyes away from the light. Today is the first Sunday in the season of Epiphany, the time when the church proclaims the appearance of Christ to the whole world. Even in his infancy, the Christ child stirred up a capital city, disturbed a reigning king, and attracted rich, savvy, and powerful foreigners to come and worship him. And that invitation comes to each of us to be his body in the world, casting aside any discouragement and fear, and placing our lives in his outstretched arms. In his powerful arms, Christ invites us to live into hope. So let's resolve today to be in that 9% of those who succeed in their New Year's resolutions. Let us enter 2023 in praise, joy, gratitude, and worship, accepting God's light to shine in our lives, no matter what's going on. And may we not grow weary then in sharing that light with others. May it be so for you and for me.